One of the most fascinating stories that's found in the Bible occurred during the time of Judges, and yet it's not found in the book of Judges. Now, this particular story took place during the spring between the Feast of Unleavened Bread and Pentecost. And the Jews usually read the entire story every year on Shavuot, as they call it, which is Pentecost. So we are preparing to keep Pentecost tomorrow, and be good to look at that story today. And in doing so, we're going to be reminded of some valuable lessons that we need to learn. So let's turn to that story. Oh, it's the book of Ruth. It's the book of Ruth. Let me give you a little background. We find in verse 1 of chapter 1 that in the day that the judges ruled, and it's probably in the earlier time of the judges, because the judges, that time period extended to about 300 years. We don't know exactly when this story took place, but apparently in the earlier years, as we'll see as we go through. There was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and two sons. So the relationship between Israel and Moab was such that since they bordered each other, wars broke out occasionally, and sometimes there was peace that prevailed between them. The big difference between the two nations was not of any racial difference, but more of a religious difference, because you see, Moab was one of the sons of Lot, who was a nephew of Abraham. The big difference is that Israel was keeping the laws of God. Moab got into idolatry. We don't know who the judge was during the time this was written. But we do know, if you look at the last verse of Judges, which is either on the page before or the page right on across the page, Judges 21, verse 25. In those days there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. So it was kind of like whatever people felt was right or decent, they would do. So a certain man went, and we know that this was Elimelech, and in Hebrew it indicates that this particular man was someone wealthy, of importance. And he went to sojourn in the name, or in the, as we see here, they went to dwell, or actually sojourn. Originally, that's what he wanted to do, just stay there for a little bit, but they remained there, as it says in verse 2. We find out who all went. Elimelech, one wonders if he descended from a prince of Judah because of his name. Eli, of course, references God, and it means God is my king. So he may have had some standing. Well, apparently he did, as we find out that he was in the gate, as we'll see a little later. And that was an area where the leaders of the city would come together and settle things. And so Bethlehem at the time was one of the most beautiful locations in Israel. It was also a very wealthy area at the time, and they were called Ephrathites there in Bethlehem. And so you see that we continue there, that Naomi's husband died. He died there, and so she was left alone with her two sons. And her two sons had taken wives of the women of Moab. Technically, they weren't supposed to do this because they were only supposed to marry within Judah. But they did this, and one was named Orpah, and the other was named Ruth. They dwelt there 10 years. It's a long time in that area. Then both Mahlon and Chilion died. And the woman then survived her two sons and her husband. So that was very difficult for Naomi, having lost her husband, then two sons. So she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. So after her husband's sons died, then she decided to go back home now that the famine had been over. And we don't know how long the famine had been over, but she decided now was a good time to go back home. And she then tried to talk her daughters-in-law into staying. Verse 7, therefore she went out from the place and her two daughters-in-law with her. And they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. So they're already coming with her. And she said to them in verse 8, you go, you return to your mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me, as you have dealt with your husbands. You were kind wives to my sons, and let God deal with you. She must have taught them a little bit about God, because if she's talking to them about the Lord, would deal kindly with you. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband. You know, you're too young to come and follow me. And she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said, surely we will return with you to your people. Both of them said that. We will return with you. We want to go with you. And Naomi said, no, turn back, my daughters, for why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Interesting statement here. It's hard to know how much the daughters-in-law understood the religion that Ruth had known about. Naomi must have told them about a law of God that is found over here in Deuteronomy 25. Let's look at Deuteronomy 25, keep our place there in Ruth. Deuteronomy 25, and let's look at verse 5. Deuteronomy 25, verse 5. If brothers dwell together and one of them dies and has no son, the widow of the dead man shall not be married to a stranger outside the family. She's supposed to marry someone within the family. Namely, in this case, her husband's brother shall go in to take her as his wife and perform the duty of the husband's brother to her. It shall be that the firstborn son that she bears will succeed to the name of his dead brother. Your firstborn son that you would have then takes on the name of the dead brother, not the live brother, but the dead brother, so that the inheritance would not be blotted out in Israel. His name would not be blotted out in Israel. So this was the law that she's referring to. So Naomi's saying, look, are you going to wait for me to get married again and have another son? And will you then wait? Turn back, my daughters, verse 12. I'm too old to have a husband. If I should say I have some hope that if I should have a husband tonight and should bear sons, will you wait for them till they were grown? Would you have restrained yourselves from having husbands? Would you just not have husbands while the sons grow older? No, my daughters, it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Now, here's one thing that we see Naomi is doing here that we should learn from, and that she is basically saying, this is what God has done to me. And we'll see a little later how things change, but she's very grieved. So she's not really wanting the daughters-in-law to go back, but then again, she is, and she'll go back alone, and her daughters-in-law love her. It was a very difficult situation. They lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. So one went back, and one stayed. And she said, look, Naomi's telling Ruth, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. So she's going back to what she's familiar with. You return after your sister-in-law. And she was really pushing her to do so, as we see in the Hebrew here. It's quite interesting what the Hebrew brings out when you go into this word, what Ruth said, entreat me not to leave you. Or another way of saying is, urge me not to go with, to leave you. Entreat me. Now in the Hebrew, it means more like an aggressive movement, a pressing, or almost afflicting physically. Naomi was very persistent, and it's almost like she was pushing Ruth. You go back, and more than just urging, but just a very intensive type of aggressiveness, you go back. But Ruth was almost the same way with her. She said, don't do that. Don't do that to me to leave you or to turn back from following you. These are famous words here. Wherever you go, I'll go. Wherever you lodge, I'll lodge. Your people will be my people. Your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I'll be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also. She's calling upon God like an oath here. This is what I intend to do, if anything but death parts you and me. She's not even concerned about another husband in this case. She wants to be with Naomi. She wants to go where Naomi's going. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Very determined here. And when she saw that she was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her. Naomi realized, I can't convince her any other way. So it's a total commitment. She was committed even to death. She burned her bridges behind her. Her people, her culture, her parents, as we'll see a little later. You know, this is what we've had to do as well. Let's notice, keep our place here. Let's notice Luke 14 and verse 25. Luke 14 and verse 25. This was more than likely quoted to us when we were talking about baptism, or at least the principle was brought out. Great multitudes went with him, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother and wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Very telling here what Christ told those who were following him. It doesn't mean to really literally hate father and mother and wife and children. It means to love less in comparison. In other words, we love God more than our family. The God is our priority. He's the number one priority in our lives. And notice verse 33 of the same chapter. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. Ruth forsook all that she had to be with Naomi. We have forsaken, or at least we should have been forsaking, all that we had to become the disciples of Jesus Christ. In other words, God becomes our priority in everything we do. So let's go back to verse 19 then in Ruth 1. The two of them went until they came to Bethlehem, and it happened when they came to Bethlehem that all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, is this Naomi? So they remembered her. And then notice what she said. The first time they see her in 10 years. And she said to them, don't call me Naomi, which means pleasant. Don't call me that. Call me Mara, meaning bitter. Bitter instead of pleasant. Don't call me pleasant. Call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. What a thing to say the first time you see people after 10 years. God just dealt badly with me. I went out full. The Lord has brought me home empty. Why do you call me Naomi? Since the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has afflicted me. Kind of like, just didn't work out. you know, God's afflicted me, dealt bitterly with me. Who's listening? Ruth. Ruth right there. The women of the city are right there. And I think it's something we've got to understand that sometimes we as members need to watch what we say about the difficulties we go through in our lives, especially if there are some people who might be newer to the faith, and not to attribute to God our difficulties. Remember, God does not tempt anyone. Sometimes it's our own lusts that get us in trouble. We don't want other people to hear that we blame God and put God on the spot as being responsible for our problems. Or that God's forsaken us. I don't know. I just had all these difficulties and God's not answering me. So I don't know what's happening. He doesn't hear our prayers. This is what Naomi was doing as she was coming back into the land. The first thing she said, instead of saying, "Oh, I'm so glad to see all you ladies. I'm so happy to be here. You know, we're back here and here's my daughter-in-law." It was, call me bitter. So it wasn't a good deal, you know, when she first. So Naomi returned and Ruth the Moabitess' daughter with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. And here we find the timing of this, the time story of the, of what we find here. The barley harvest began with the wave sheaf offering, you know, on that first Sunday during the Days of Unleavened Bread after the Passover. So this book is a period of time between that time, the beginning of the barley harvest, to the end of the barley harvest, which would have been Pentecost. So it's that time frame that we're basically in right now, because tomorrow, is Pentecost. So we come to chapter 2. There was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So here, his name actually means a man of valor, a man of courage. He was not only a man of great wealth, but of a good character. Now, he's probably a nephew of Naomi. We don't know for sure, but could have been one of the cousins of, you know, Ruth's husband. The Bible doesn't say, just that there's a relationship there with Elimelech, the family of Elimelech. Remember now that the family of Elimelech, with his two sons dead and no children, that name is no longer. It's kind of died out. So we'll see an interesting development as we go through the story here. The Jewish tradition states that Boaz was about 70 years old and that Ruth was about 40. Now, I can't verify that. We weren't there, so we don't know exactly. But some of the time sequences seem to indicate something like that, and other internal evidence shows something. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie about the story of Ruth with Stuart Whitman. First time I saw that was a teenager in Chicago. It was one of the movie nights that we had for a church social, and played that movie. It was fascinating. I wish these movie writers would write according to what the Bible says. But if you get a chance sometime, if you see it ever, it is interesting to look at the story of Ruth. Again, the Bible is true, not that movie. But we get into verse 2. Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field, glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I might find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." She left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. She happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now notice, Naomi did not tell her where to go. She just determined she was going to go and glean. Now, where did she get this understanding of gleaning in the fields? Keep our place here, and let's look at one of the instructions of Pentecost over here in Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23. In verse 15 and 16, we see the beginning of the description of Pentecost about counting 50 days. You know, the seven Sabbaths shall be complete. And then in that same instruction of Pentecost, we come to verse 22. Verse 22. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field when you reap, nor shall you gather any gleaning from your harvest. You shall leave them for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God. Now Ruth was both poor and a stranger, not one who is of the land. I am the Lord your God. So here you find this instruction, and one wonders if Naomi just mentioned that's what people do when they're poor and you go out and glean in these fields, you know, after the reapers. So she did it. She goes out and does this. Verse 4. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they blessed him, the Lord bless you. So here the first words we see Boaz saying is he's acknowledging God to the reapers. He's encouraging the reapers. And you see they say the same thing to you, the same thing to him. So there was no animosity here. There was a genuine respect and honor toward one another. Him toward the reapers and the reapers toward him. And, you know, he wasn't one of these, you know, dictatorial bosses and just calling upon God's name to bless them and to be with them. And then we go on here. And we see that Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, whose woman is this? Now, it's interesting, again, looking at tradition, that when you have a person in charge of the reapers, there's a lot of people in the fields when they reap. And an overseer could be over at least 40-some workers in the field. So there's a lot of people in there. And there's a series on TV called From Lark Rise to Candleford. And there's one series in there about when the villagers reaped the fields. It's very interesting to see how they did that. And this is kind of reminded me, you know, looking at that series of about reaping in the fields. But anyway, we're talking about a lot of workers here, and he notices this young woman. And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, it is the young Moabite woman. Notice, not just Ruth, it's not just Naomi's daughter-in-law, it's the Moabite woman with Naomi, who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. And so she came and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house. So she started in the morning till now, and she's rested some. So she was doing a lot of work so that Naomi would not have to. Naomi's older. She's younger, and she's doing this work for Naomi. And then Boaz then comes to Ruth, and you see this compassion that he has. He says to Ruth, you will listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not glean in another field, nor go off from here, but stay close to my young men. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap. Go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, you go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn. And so here you see this compassion, and apparently somehow between the time that he found out who this was, he tells the young men, you leave Ruth alone. You know, don't mess around with her. You just leave her alone. And so he's telling her, I've told the young men to back off, you know, and You're free to be here. And notice verse 10 then. Here we find Ruth falling down on her face and worshiping. She's bowed down to the ground, not so much worshiping, but just bowed down to him, and said, "What have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner?" That's a very important question that she asks, and we will see that answered a little later. Why are you so concerned for me? Why should you take notice of me? We'll get back to that, but just keep that in mind. And Boaz answered and said, "It has been fully reported to me all that you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband." Now remember, there's no internet back then. There's no Facebook. This had to have been a reputation of Ruth that was understood by the people in the community, and that it got around how she supported her mother-in-law after the death of her own husband. How you left your father and your mother, meaning that they must still have been alive. You left them and the land of your birth, and you've come to a people whom you didn't know before. You didn't know any of us, and yet you came here. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge. He didn't say, "Well, hey, look, you know, I'm this big dude here, and I'm glad you're here, and I'll give you rest." He didn't do this. He honored God. He said, "The Lord repay you, the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you've come." Such a blessing that God's giving you. And then she said, "Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you've comforted me. You've spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I'm not like one of your maidservants. I'm not like everyone here, but you've been kind to me." So Boaz said to her at mealtime, "Come here and eat of the bread and dip your piece of the bread in the vinegar." And so she sat beside the reapers and passed parched grain to her. He passed parched grain to her. She ate and was satisfied and kept back some. What do you think that was for? For Naomi. She's eating this meal. She's thinking of Naomi. So she's keeping back some. When she rises up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves and don't reproach her." Even the sheaves that are already established, already, you know, bundled, let her do it. "And let grain from the bundles fall purposely for her. Leave it that she may glean, and don't rebuke her." In other words, let the grain somehow fall on the ground and let her be able to make it easier for her. And so she took it up, went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She brought out and gave to her what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. So she gave back, you know, some of that meal that she kept back to give to Naomi, and she brought the gleanings into the home. It's interesting that verse 17 talks about what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley, and that probably was around 3/4 of a bushel that she gathered that particular day. So we come to verse 19 now. And her mother-in-law said, "Where have you gleaned today? Where did you go to work? Or where'd you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you." So she said to whom she had worked, and she said, "The man's name with whom I worked is Boaz." Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be the Lord." Oh, a change in Naomi. She's realizing something here, that God's beginning to work in this situation. She honors God. "Blessed be the Lord, who has not forsaken his kindness." Oh, no more bitter here. God hasn't forsaken his kindness to the living, meaning Naomi and Ruth, and to the dead, the family of Elimelech, Mahlon, Chilion. Naomi said to her, "This man is a relative of ours, one of our close relatives." she realized what was happening. She realized she ended up in this field. Now, did Naomi not remember who this relative was? It's hard to know. But it is interesting that Ruth was led to this field, and then she came back from the field, told her, and she, Naomi, is saying, "Do you know who Boaz is? He is a relative." Bingo! The law. The law about marrying within the family comes into play here. Okay. Ruth said, "He said to me, 'You shall stay close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" Talking about a couple of months. Remember, between the wave sheaf, Pentecost, we're talking about 50 days. So Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with this, his young women, and that people do not meet you in any other field, So she stayed close by the young men of women of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest, the wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. So all that time, from the beginning of the harvest to the end, which we know is Pentecost, she stayed with Naomi and gleaned in the fields. So we come to then, before we get into chapter 3, let's keep our place here and let's notice a similar story over here in John 4. Let's look at John 4. This was the Samaritan woman who came out to the well, and Jesus Christ was sitting at the well. And Jesus Christ is talking to this Samaritan woman in John 4 and verse 5. John 4 and verse 5. "He came to the city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, being wearied from his journey, sat by the well." It was about the sixth hour, so it's around noon, and a woman of Samaria came, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." The disciples had gone into the city to buy food. Now, again, what was interesting to Ruth was that Boaz would talk to her as this foreigner. Well, this lady here, the Samaritan woman, said, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. We're not kosher in the sight of the Jews. How can you talk to me like this?" And again, the whole story is fascinating to review. If you knew the gift of God, Christ said, "And he who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." And of course, we know that we're talking about spiritual issues here and spiritual truth. And here is a Samaritan that Christ is saying, "Look, you can receive living water." Boaz offered this Moabitess, Ruth, food and drink. And we see in verse 13, he said in verse 13, chapter 4 here, in John, "Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I'll give will never thirst, but the water that I give will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life." We're talking about God's Holy Spirit. We're talking about the understanding of God's truth. The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water that I may not thirst nor come here to draw." So she wanted some of that water. Now, we'll skip some of this story. Let's pick it up in verse 25. Verse 25. "The woman said to him, 'I know that Messiah is coming, who's called Christ. When he comes, he will tell us all things.' And Jesus said to her, 'I who speak to you am he.'" I am. I'm he. I'm the one about the Messiah. Here, Jesus revealed himself to her, the Samaritan woman, that he was the Messiah. So we find that she then leaves her water pot. In verse 29, she goes into the city and tells the men there that this man told me all the things I ever did. Could this be the Christ? They went out of the city to him, to come to him. The men went out. And so it's also interesting here that what the men of the city realized in verse 30. Let's pick it up in verse 34. He told the disciples, first of all, before he talks about the men, or the men of the city, he tells the disciples, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. And he talks about the harvest. And the fields are white with harvest. And there were people coming out of the city now. Men were coming out of the city to hear Jesus Christ. And so we go on from there then to verse 40. So when the Samaritans had come to him, they urged him to stay with them. And he stayed there 2 days. And many more believed because of his own word. And they said to the woman, now we believe not because of what you said. We ourselves have heard him. We know that this indeed is the Christ, the Savior of the world. So here were a lot of people that were like this field of harvest that were coming out, and there was Jesus Christ, and he was speaking to them, and they believed. These were all people who were not the Jews of Judea. And you have this similarity, this similar story with what was happening to Naomi and Ruth with Boaz. Boaz actually became their helper. Now, we know Jesus Christ, of course, is the ultimate helper. And, of course, we know that he sent his Spirit to be a helper for us. But we find that Jesus Christ is the one who really offers the spiritual food that we desperately need and living waters. So you have that similar story going on even there in the times of Christ. Let's go back to Ruth, now chapter 3. Ruth chapter 3. Ruth, her mother-in-law, said to her daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? Look, I'm gonna tell you something. I want security for you. Now, Boaz, whose young women you are with, is he not our relative? Doesn't he fulfill that law? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself, put on the best garment, go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies. You shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you shall do. She said to her, all that you say to me, I will do. Well, wait a minute. Now, put ourselves in the shoes of Ruth. She's coming in, and this is the tradition, the custom of the land, that when you're interested in someone, you wait at the end of the harvest, you know, you find where he's laying, and you get all dressed up, and you uncover the cover, and you lay at his feet. Okay. And she says, okay, I will do it. Faith of Ruth? Absolutely. Absolutely. So she is going to basically give herself to Boaz. And verse 6, so she went down to the threshing floor, did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her, and after Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was cheerful, he went to lay down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came to him softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. So she's there for a while, wondering, what now? Now, he's still asleep. It happened at midnight that the man was startled, turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, who are you? She said, I'm Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative. In other words, take me. I am your wife. You are my close relative. So she's giving herself to be his wife. All right. I mean, you look at the customs of that land at that time, and He is so shocked by all this. He just is overcome. He says, "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. You've come after me. You've asked me. You could have had anyone. Young men. And you're asking me. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do to you all that you request. For all people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. I will do this. And you are virtuous. And her reputation is well known in the town, that Ruth, the Moabitess, the daughter-in-law of Naomi, is a virtuous woman. And it is true, I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I." Oh. So here Boaz is being honest. He's saying, look, I'll do this, but there's another one. I got to let you know about this. Now, what's going through Ruth's mind? Uh-oh. Who? Have I ever met this man? Now, the movie calls his name who he is, but the Bible never mentions his name. But this is what he says. "You stay this night. In the morning, it'll be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative of you, good. Let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning." Now, he didn't take advantage of her. He could have, but he didn't. And she could have left him and said, "Wait a minute. What kind of law is this? You know, I want to, you know, have you as a husband. You mean I got to wait for somebody else?" Now, she didn't say that, or, you know, at least it's not here. It's not in the story. And she does what he asked. So she lay down at his feet until morning, and she rose before one could recognize another. He said, "Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." And he said, "Bring the shawl that is on you." So she had this shawl, hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 ephahs of barley into the shawl. That's like 4 bushels. Can you imagine that? 4 bushels of grain in the shawl? Now, women used to do that. That was the type of work that they bundled all that. And it says, he laid it on her. So somehow she had it put on her, you know, back, and she was able to somehow maneuver with it. And she went into the city. And when she comes to her mother-in-law, she tells her all that the man had done for her. And she said in verse 17, "These 6 ephahs of barley he gave to me." And he said, "Don't go empty-handed to your mother-in-law." And she said, "Sit still, my daughter." Naomi's telling her, "Ruth, you just sit still until you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter to this day." So even Naomi knew about the reputation of Boaz, that he truly was a man of diligence, a man of reliability. And again, that's a question we all have to ask ourselves. Are we like Boaz? Are we known for our reputation of being reliable and taking care of things that need to be taken care of? Okay, so now we come into chapter 4. Boaz went down to the gate. So at the gate is where they made all these decisions with the leaders of the city. He sat down there and said, "The close relative of Boaz who came here, it says the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken of came by. So Boaz said, come, friend, sit down here. So he came, sat down. And so Boaz took 10 men of the elders of the city. They're all sitting here. Sit down here. So they all sat down. They're going to listen to this proposition here. And he said to the close relative, Naomi, who's come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. Sold it. Now, we're the close relatives. We need to redeem it. Need to get it, buy it back. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you. And the fellow said, I will redeem it. Okay. That's what he wanted to do. I'll redeem the land. That's no problem. I'll plan to do that. But there's a catch. And Boaz is pretty good. Now remember, he's Jewish. So there's a little bit of I'm going to tell you a little bit more about this good deal. This good deal is found in verse 5 here. Verse 5. Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance. Oh, but you've got to do this too. You got to have a child by her so that the name doesn't die out in Israel. According to, you know, the laws that we saw earlier in Deuteronomy. Close relatives, and you notice he's not named here. It's always just the close relative. I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. Big mistake, as we'll see a little later. Big, big mistake. I'll ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself. I cannot redeem it. So he just said no. And so it was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redeeming and exchanging to confirm anything. One man took off a sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a confirmation in Israel. You know, today we shake hands. We don't take off our shoe and give it to the guy, but that's what was done at that time. Therefore, the close relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. So he took off his sandal. And Boaz said to the elders and to all the people, you are witnesses this day that I bought all that was Elimelech's, all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. I'm redeeming this land. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife. So he separates, I've acquired this land and this property, but I've also acquired Ruth as my wife. Back then, the women would come as kind of like servants of the land. They were treated as chattel, and they were kind of just lumped in with the properties. Boaz didn't do that here with Ruth. He said, I'm redeeming the land, and I'm also redeeming Ruth. And notice what else he says, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. Huh. His position at the gate. Elimelech was there at the gate and had some type of leadership role in the city many years before. So you are witnesses of this day. And the people who were at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah. Whoa. What an honor. The people are accepting Ruth as their own to say that she is like Rachel and Leah. Rachel and Leah were the ones who built the house of Israel. And may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. They're honoring Ruth. The greatest honor to be given is to be likened to the wives of Jacob, Rachel and Leah. May your house be like the house of Perez. Perez, of course, was the son of Judah, whom Tamar bore, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman. So, you find that they're all accepting her, and you see that Boaz took Ruth, she became his wife, and when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, she bore a son. So this was of God, God worked this out, that she had a son. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel." And well, did it become famous? And they're telling her, "Blessed be the Lord. May he be to you a restorer of life and nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you is better than seven sons has borne him." Naomi took the child, laid her on her bosom, and became a nurse to him. And the neighbor women gave him a name. Notice it wasn't Boaz and Ruth who named him. It was the women of the city gave him a name, saying, "There is a son born to Naomi," and they called his name Obed. Obed. Now, Obed basically means worship, honor, serving, in this case, God. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David, David's grandfather. Obed's grandson was David. See what that other guy left? His inheritance? He didn't want his inheritance messed around with. Look at this inheritance. Just a fascinating story. Now look at this lineage here. Here is the genealogy of Perez, who was the son of Judah through Tamar. Perez begot Hezron. Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Amminadab, and Amminadab begot Nashon. Nashon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz. Boaz begot Obed. Obed begot Jesse. Jesse begot David. There's some names missing here. Elimelech and Mahlon. Remember that one of the reasons that Boaz took Ruth was to perpetuate the name of Elimelech and Mahlon. But the way God looked at it here, the way God arranged it and looked at it, the name of Boaz is here. And the inheritance went through Boaz, even though he was a relative, of course, of Elimelech. And again, that's another interesting view on this whole point here. So you see how the book ends, but it doesn't end there. Let's look at Matthew 1. Matthew 1. In verse 1. Matthew 1 and verse 1. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Jesus Christ, the son of David, son of Abraham. Notice verse 4. Ram begot Amminadab. Amminadab begot Nashon. Nashon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz by Rahab. One of the few women, I think it's the only woman that's listed in the genealogy. Rahab. Boaz begot Obed by Ruth. Obed begot Jesse. We see here the mother of Boaz, Rahab. Who was Rahab? She was in Jericho. Remember? She hid the spies. She trusted God. She became part of Israel. Not only that, she became part of the line of Jesus Christ. Why do you think Boaz was so interested in Ruth? When Ruth said, "You're so concerned for a foreigner, why are you so concerned?" Well, he knew what it was like. He grew up in the household with Salmon, his dad, and his mom, Rahab. And there was this unique relationship there, and where Rahab was accepted by Israel. So you have this interesting development that both Rahab and Ruth were not of Israel. They were not of Judah but they became part of the lineage of Jesus Christ. And of course, they married Jewish men. And it's all part here. So he, you know, Boaz knew a little bit about outsiders coming into Israel. And he knew what Ruth had done, to leave her land and to come in and follow God. So here we have Jesus Christ's line going all the way back to this barley harvest, sometime that took place during the time of the judges, Feast of the First Fruits. And when Christ returns, he's going to sit on the throne of David forever and ever. Now, before we conclude, I want to look at a couple of lessons here that we could look at about the meaning of Pentecost. And we'll see three of these thoughts in the book of Ephesians. So let's look at three things here. First one is in Ephesians 2, verse 18. Ephesians 2, verse 18. For through him we both have access by one Spirit to the Father. You are no longer strangers, but foreigners, fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone. Verse 22, in whom you are also being built together for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. So here we find that the church is made up of all peoples, both Jews and Gentiles, or those who accept God's way of life. We've seen this example of Ruth. We know about the story of Rahab. They were accepted, and so too are we accepted into the body of Christ through the Spirit of God. And as we heard in the sermonette today, we all need to work together within the body of Jesus Christ. Honor one another and accept one another. We do know that the people in the community of Bethlehem accepted Ruth. And Ruth, of course, accepted all the traditions and customs and the laws of God. Let's look at the second point, Ephesians 5, verse 30. Ephesians 5, verse 30. So we're members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. We're the church. Verse 31. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular love his own wife as himself. Let the wife see that she respects her husband. So through the Spirit of God, we are in the body of Jesus Christ, and it's like a marriage relationship with Jesus Christ. We yield to Christ, and Christ loves his church. And then we find, nevertheless, let each of you particular love his own wife as himself. Boaz and Ruth loved one another deeply, had deep respect for one another, and we too should as well in our own marriages. All right, then let's look at one other one, Ephesians 6, verse 10. Ephesians 6, verse 10. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. We've got to be strong and not give up. We need to be like Boaz, who is determined to follow the laws of God and not be like that unnamed relative who threw everything away, who wanted his own selfish will. Will we give up our future inheritance for something earthly? Is there something out there, something earthly, that we have that could cause us to lose out on our eternal inheritance? Something to consider. Because as we heard earlier, again in the sermonette, verse 12 kind of follows that. It's in the context here. We are wrestling against Satan's influence. And he keeps putting the pressure on. And it gets worse and worse as the days go by. So Ruth and Boaz did not do that. They did not give in to what was their earthly you know, something on the earth. They just totally gave themselves to God and what God requires in the law. Now, Ruth was unique. She followed Naomi and said, your God will be my God. She trusted in God. She trusted that everything would work out for her. It took time. We know that. And we see even Ruth's attitude changed from blaming God to just praising God for what he did and acknowledging God's involvement. There might be times where things look bleak at times, but for Naomi and for Ruth and for Boaz, God worked it all out. And he will he will do that for us as well. And let's conclude then with a scripture here in Romans 8. Romans 8, verse 23. Romans 8, verse 23. Not only that, but we also who have the first fruits of the Spirit, we ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption, the redemption of our body. How many of us are eagerly waiting? We groan. We see all this tragedy that occurs, even in the church when there's tragic occurrences that take place. Do we not groan for the kingdom to come, that we wish it would come sooner? Absolutely. But we're saved in this hope. The hope that is seen is not hope, but and hope that is seen is not hope, for why does one still hope for what he sees? Our hope for what we do not see. We eagerly wait for it with perseverance. So our hope in the kingdom, we are eagerly waiting for it. And so even the Spirit helps us in our weaknesses. We do not know what we should pray as we ought. The Spirit itself should read, makes intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. Now he who searches the hearts knows what the mind of the Spirit is, because it makes intercession for the saints according to the will of God. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. We are called according to his purpose. And whatever happens in our lives, it's for the good, for our good and for God's good. Everything is according to the will of God. Again, Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz showed that in an exemplary manner. And it's all during that time of the year that we're in now and just before Pentecost. So as we keep Pentecost tomorrow, we've got to be reminded once again that we are the first fruits of God. We are the redeemed by Jesus Christ. So let's not neglect, of course, the inheritance that God has in store for us. We need to press on and to continue in it and be faithful in our calling.